for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
It was reported as a positive trip by the IAEA chief Rafael Grossi to Iran's capital, Tehran. Grossi hailed relations between Iran and the IAEA as positive after meeting with Iran's atomic chief Islami and Iran's president Ebrahim Raisi. But underlying this trip, IAEA inspectors had reported Iran had enriched uranium close to 84%, which Iran had to then clarify. Why are there such reports which then require Iran to have to defend its stance? And why did Grossi, when asked whether the IAEA is a political tool at the hands of a few, would deny this to be the case? Just a couple of the angles we'll be looking at in this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guest. Farshid Baghariyan is a political analyst who joins us from Karaj. Also joining us is Don Dabar, who's an activist and commentator, joining us from Austin in New York.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome. Farshid Baghariyan, first over to you. We're looking at what was this trip that took 2 days in duration, of which it was, I don't want to use the word hailed, but it was widely reported to be very positive in terms of the cooperation, and some even called an agreement between the IAEA and Iran. But why should this be such a positive thing when you take a look at all the different hardships that Iran has endured, based on giving itself that cooperation spirit and then not getting what it should have gotten in return?
Thank you very much. I believe that the International Atomic Agency took the Iranian cooperation as a granted, because Iran, during this talk and deal with Iran for the nuclear talks from 2015 till now, during this time, always Iranian did their duty, but the Western Europe, the Western powers, especially the United States, they didn't act as a friendly act to us. So I just see in some days before, Mr. Putin announced that he withdraw from the START 1 nuclear agreement with the United States. This is what the main reason of the trip of Mr. Grossi to Tehran, because the escalation of the nuclear hazard and nuclear war around the world, it make them to think about again for Iran, because the particle they found as 84% of enrichment is what merely was the particle, not the activity. And right now the report should be friendly, as they had a common press briefing, I think, and they told that the enrichment was 60%, and this is acceptable for us. It was acceptable before this trip, and right now they need some guarantee from Iran for not enrich anymore, or maybe help Russia, because Russia is merging for a new attack on the spring to the Ukraine, and the escalation of the nuclear hazard maybe they spread over all around the world. This is the fact that they are approaching more friendly to Iran this time. This is the fact, not anything else, because Mr. Ned Price and Blinken speeches regarding and the their opinion was not friendly, and they told that we are waiting for the report from the Mr. Gerussi, and Mr. Gerussi is not the decision maker for the West, and just not bringing any he's not bringing any message from West to us. Just Mr. Gerussi is take them that Iran did his duty, and Iran is giving the guarantee to not support any nuclear hazard for the spread over the world. That is the fact that okay. Mr. Gerussi was here. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Don DeBar, I guess they're talked about 60% enrichment. I have so many questions to ask, but just on that particular note there, there was a press conference that Grossi had in Vienna just about an hour ago. And this is really interesting. He says on the 60%, the Iranians, don't need to tell us why they reached 60%. What's important, we have the necessary ability to inspect. Isn't that kind of an odd statement to come from the IAEA chief, Rafael Grossi?
It is an odd statement if you expect essentially that these, that the architecture of international relations is, an architecture of honest brokerage. But of course, it's not. It's in the real world. The United States and the Soviet Union were the principal engines of the IAEA. Eisenhower is credited with, being his brainchild in 1957, but the United States didn't ratify the treaty and put it into effect as against the U.S. until 1967. The organization is centered in Vienna. That's the heart of NATO, basically. And it has been, like the other instruments of international architecture based in Western Europe, an instrument of colonial control of much of the rest of the world. Look at the International Court of Justice and the other, the Hague judicial structures in general, which for some reason seem to prefer to indict African leaders over any other, potential defendants. The objective picture, going on right now is the United States is attempting to isolate each of its enemies between Russia, China, Iran in particular, and also South Africa and others that are beginning to see perhaps the objective requirement of some sort of military cooperation in the face of, an assault from the U.S. and NATO against all of them at once. There are the claims that Iran is sending drones and setting up manufacturing facilities for drones in Russia. There's the claim that China is considering manufacturing weapons for Russia, threats from the United States and all of that. This is the context in which Grossi holds his press conference. Remarkable, actually, is the fact that he didn't claim to find a nuclear suitcase when he was in Tehran and seek to have the U.S. invade and get rid of the weapons of mass destruction, because that is the pressure certainly coming from Washington at the moment.
Farshid Balkhanian, taking a look at what question was asked by our Press TV correspondent to Rafael Grossi on the fact that whether the IAEA has been politicized in terms of the way information is given out or that it's being used as a political tool, and in terms of just overall vis-a-vis Iran, how it's given out ambiguous statements the response by Grossi was, I think any attack, any military attack on a nuclear facility is outlaw, is out of the normative structures that we will all abide by. And he wouldn't even acknowledge that Iran's nuclear facility was actually attacked by Israel on more than one occasion. I mean, this was this is Rafael Grossi of the past. I'm not too sure what type of transformation he's gone through from then since now when it comes to Israel. Of course, we need to also mention that he went to Israel before there was a resolution leveled against Iran through the Board of Governors in the past. Why is he playing that posturing when asked that question?
I believe that, first of all, thank to our friend, fully agree with what he said. The fact is, Iran is right now, we have an expression in political science that means that sitting on the fence. Iran right now is sitting on the fence, and Iran can be declined to the right or the left. And that is the fact. Right now, they are. It's terrifying the world. I mean, the nuclear talk is right now terrifying the world. Because we can decline to the third, World War III. Maybe we can decline to the position that may push the world to the peace talk. This is the fact that right now, as you see, one or two days before, it was a news that in the media that Russia is trying to reach to the Persian Gulf or the Oman Sea, and they can consider that Russia is spreading its power to the whole region. Regarding the Israel, and holding this point right now, regarding the Israel, Israel has a very vulnerable size, and Israel is not a powerful. Despite of Iron Dome, and Israel is not a safe place for the Israeli people. And any conflict with Iran through drones, through missiles, or any kind of the war machine, it would be very hazardous for the region, especially for the Israel regime. So right now, they are trying to push Iran down from the fence to the exact point or exact site that they want right now. And I want to repeat that Mr. Grossi is not the policymaker guy or the player. Just he sent his report, and remember that after the September 11th, then they attacked Iraq, and they after that, because they found some facilities and some site that they are producing chemical and biological and maybe a nuclear weapon. And after that, they said that the FBI report was false. Mm-hmm. Right now, Iran is not giving them any permission to give the false report. And this is the fact that Mr. Grossi was here in Iran.
All right. Don DeBar, as this news is spreading, because it's very fresh off the press, especially given this press conference that Rafael Grossi had in Vienna, a very simple question that comes out of this is, why should Iran trust, I'm not going to say the agency, but the other actors, in particular the U.S., when it comes to anything that has to deal with Iran's civilian nuclear file? I mean, why should there be optimism here, which Grossi is sending this message of optimism? Put that into context for us, if you can.
Yeah, there's a number of ways to do that. Very first is there is already an agreement that was negotiated over a period of years with an awful lot of pressure from the United States, an awful lot of determination from Iran to protect its sovereignty, a participation of many others. Agreement was signed, executed, implemented, except for the part where Iran was supposed to get sanctions relief. That never really happened. Trump gets elected. He was campaigning against the agreement, and he abrogated what little participation the U.S. had done up to that point. And Biden ran against that, saying that Trump, was making trouble where there was no need for trouble and that he shouldn't have withdrawn from the agreement. And now we're 2 years into Biden's administration, and we still are here playing this game instead of starting, where we were at on January 20th, 2017. That's the aspect with respect to the U.S. In 2014 and 2015, the United States, some 50 years after the execution of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which calls for the sunsetting of all nuclear weapons within a reasonable period of time, announces, in fact, it's going to spend $1 trillion to renew its nuclear arsenal. And I know that Mr. Grossi was not the head of the IAEA at the time, but I don't see any statement right now demanding that the United States cease and desist from that. Finally, in the context of the war in Ukraine, the nuclear doctrine of Russia was spelled out very simply, which is, number one, we will only use nuclear weapons if we are attacked with nuclear weapons or if the very survival of our state is threatened. And the U.S. response to that was to announce that they intended to take down the Russian state. If I were the head of the IAEA, I would then condemn the United States, first of all, for making this statement, and then tell them you have to do everything to back out of this condition so you don't provoke a nuclear war. And I don't see any of that happening. I see them nickel and diming Iran, impugning its integrity and sovereignty, and frankly, shilling for Israel.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, so since both have mentioned Ukraine in this context in terms of Iran, Farshid Bagherian, are we looking at the fact that instead of anybody pinning their hopes on something coming out of all the positive, from what it appears to be positive news coming from Grossi, that this is just so Grossi, through the IAEA, which is one of the UN's organization, which the U.S. provides at least almost a quarter of its budget, that they just want to have some kind of watch over Iran's civilian nuclear program, but they're not going to give any type of room for Iran because they believe that Iran, which Iran has denied, is providing Russia with these, for example, drones.
I believe that the watchdogs group prior to the trip of Mr. Grossi was in Iran, and they inspected everything. And so he was, how can I explain? It was a political show only, merely, and nothing else. But the friendly and positively report has not make sense for Iran, first of all, because we are facing another decision making. For example, right now the Congress and the Senate of the United States is not giving power to the Mr. Biden administration, Mr. Biden himself, for example, to sign any new agreement with Iran, and they have to pass it because the legitimacy of this the agreement would be passed from the Congress, and they're very blockage and obstacle for Iran, for the any new agreement for Iran. But as I'm going to repeat again, the fact is we are approaching a new world war, maybe hazard, because Mr. Gerasimov is right now is the head of the operation of the new spring attack to Ukraine. And the Gerasimov doctrine itself contains the using of the nuclear power. And that is the fact that the world is right now is being terrified, and in this position they want to make Iran silence, to not cooperate with Russia as a strategic tie or
Well, when you say this cooperation, that's a good point. We're kind of straying a little bit away from the subject here, but Don DeBar, this cooperation between Iran and Russia is alarming the White House, and it is definitely alarming Israel. Our guest there says perhaps that they, the U.S. and Israel, will be looking at this from the top down in terms of them wanting to do things that would restrict this relationship, maybe. But maybe it's the other way around. Maybe they are noticing that this, to them, spells danger for whatever reasons they think that it would, and that they need to somewhat play catch-up in a sense. And so, therefore, they need to make sure that things get done. And Iran's civilian nuclear program is one way to at least have some kind of footing inside the Islamic Republic.
Yeah. It's leverage. That's exactly what it is. Look. You know, they do sanctions for the same reason. The purpose of sanctions, for example, and I'll point out that both Iran and Russia are the subject of massive sanctions from the U.S. and the EU. The purpose of that is to immiserate the population in the countries in the hope that it will create political unrest and the government will fall or be compromised or in a position where it will negotiate from a position of weakness. And the negotiations are high-pressure negotiations, in essence, for concessions to the Western corporations, in the case both of Russia and Iran, primarily of petrochemicals, petroleum, oil, et cetera, at prices favorable to the West, including ownership, which they're not shy about claiming. The United States, which has dropped $100 billion worth of weaponry and other material aid for a war that's about 13 months old now, active shooting war in Ukraine, is telling Russia and Iran and China that they cannot, of course, have any sort of military aid from one to the other in the face of a major military threat and some 400 military bases facing those three countries under conditions of sanction, under conditions of continuous military provocation, as you pointed out, under conditions where the nuclear facilities are attacked militarily by the U.S. agent in the area, Israel. And so, you know, there is some pushback, but unfortunately for Russia and Iran and China, their sanity prevents them from responding in kind because this escalates into a global war that serves no one's purposes. But the IAEA should be sitting in, I was going to say Jerusalem, but really Tel Aviv, the capital of the so-called State of Israel, and asking about the 300-plus warheads that exist there illegally. And, you know, the fact that they may or may not, Israel's state may or may not be a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty means nothing. Because if Iran withdrew from the treaty today, it certainly wouldn't mitigate what the U.S. would want to do to Iran under a claim that it has some sort of nuclear weapons. And no one's claiming Iran has anything near the capacity to produce an arsenal like the one that Israel has installed. And it's Iran that's the subject of sanctions and the subject of this, and not Israel.
That's a great point, Fashi Bagherian. When you take a look at the different threats that have come, even as recent as just days ago, practically, when you had a top U.S. Defense Department official say that Iran could make enough material for one nuclear bomb in 12 days. You had the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which has time and again, for practically more than a decade, maybe even longer, make those claims against Iran. Yet you have the U.S. Nuclear Posture Review in 2022 saying there is no evidence that the Iranian government is pursuing a nuclear weapon. Quote, Iran does not today possess a nuclear weapon, and we currently believe it is not pursuing one. That's the Pentagon's authoritative report. You have somebody from the Pentagon saying Iran is going to develop one in 12 days, but the Pentagon report says no, it does not possess a nuclear weapon, and it's not pursuing one. What do you make of the threats that Farshid Bagherian?
Israeli regime is nowadays is suffering from the turmoil. Domestic turmoil, and I think that Mr. Netanyahu cannot get rid of this turmoil right now. And they are some kind of credit. They are making a credit for the foreign policy to put it in the domestic policy. And Mr. We cannot we cannot base, I mean, making any, it doesn't make sense. The talk with Mr. Netanyahu and all he said about the, because the line that the Pentagon is said, or maybe the authorities of the United States say that they indeed make in 12 days, Iran can make the nuclear, a weapon, is the, all the words that they are using is derived from the Mr. Netanyahu administration. But the fact is Iran, after 84% enrichment, they found some particles right now, they get it down to 60%. And what happened to 12 days? And if you make a calculation, 12 days is right now make to, maybe set back to 12 months. Iran is not making any nuclear weapon. And they know this. This is the ideological context. And this is, they know it very well. But they are, as I'm trying to repeat my sentence, that they have fear regarding the strategic ties with Russia. And they have fear that maybe Russia can bring some warhead from its own motherland to Iran and put it in some, maybe some military bases. This is the fact that they are sending the watchdogs to Iran and before the trip of Mr. Gerusi. And the watchdogs is always in the, all the time in the year.
Okay, they are let me jump in and give Don DeBar, I'm sorry, 30 seconds is the last question. Yeah. Do you agree with our guest there, what he just said? Because that's a pretty pretty important point.
Yeah, I'll tell you what also is an important point is the fact that's exactly what the U.S. does with the NATO countries. You know, not Poland and Finland and whoever else that ends up in NATO on the front lines, they're not supposed to have nuclear weapons by treaty. All they right. are signatories to the non-proliferation treaty. But the United States bases nuclear weapons in those countries and says it's not those countries, it's us, and we're allowed.
Thank you. Don DeBar, activist and commentator from Mossening. Farshid Baghdadian, thank you. Political analyst from Karaj.
Good night.
And we'd like to thank you for watching this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Tatway and the team. It's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to 181st up to 183rd verses of this chapter.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
أَوْفُوا الْكَيْلَ وَلَا تَكُونُوا مِنَ الْمُخْسِرِينَ.
Give full measure and do not be of those who cause loss.
وَزِنُوا بِالْقِسْطَاسِ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ.
And weigh with an even balance.
وَلَا تَبْخَسُوا النَّاسَ أَشْيَاءَهُمْ وَلَا تَعْثَوْا فِي الْأَرْضِ مُفْسِدِينَ.
And do not deprive people of their due, and do not commit abuse on earth, spreading corruption.
أَوْفُوا الْكَيْلَ وَلَا تَكُونُوا مِنَ الْمُخْسِرِينَ وَزِنُوا بِالْقِسْطَاسِ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ. Fill up the measure, and be not of the cheaters, and weigh things with a right balance. وَلَا تَبْخَسُوا النَّاسَ أَشْيَاءَهُمْ وَلَا تَعْثَوْا فِي الْأَرْضِ مُفْسِدِينَ. Do not defraud people in their due goods, and do not act corruptly in the earth, making mischief. This is how their prophet, Prophet Shu'aib, starts to criticize them. First, in the previous episode we explained, he introduced himself, although he was not among the people of Madian, but they knew him. They knew he is trustworthy, and he introduced himself, "I am a trustworthy messenger." Inni lakum rasulun amin fattaqullaha ati'un. He tried to invite them. These invitations were the same as the other prophets. They are invitations to piety, emphasizing on their background of trustworthiness among the people, and saying that their godly call has only spiritual motive, and they demand no material wage for it from anyone. They only demand their recompense from the Lord of the worlds. This was for the sake that the pretext seekers and those ones who are always looking for pretexts might not misuse it. So he starts to criticize them. أوفوا الكيل ولا تكونوا من المخسرين. Fill up the measure and be not of the cheaters. The Arabic word kail or measure is used for liquid substances, and the word qistas, وَزِنُوا بِالْقِسْطَاسِ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ, the word balance is used for weights. And the word أَشْيَاء, وَلَا تَبْخَسُوا النَّاسَ أَشْيَاءَهُمْ, their goods in this sense, is used for the things which are counted or bought and sold by the pieces. Now, in these holy verses, there are two divine enjoinments and two prohibitions which are complementary of each other. Fill up and be not. Weigh and do not defraud. أوفوا الكيل ولا تكونوا من المخسرين. زنوا بالقسطاس المستقيم لا تبخسوا الناس أشياءهم. It is mentioned in some Islamic narrations that the persons who do not tell the blemish or defect of their goods to the customer, the angels will curse them. And those who deceive others with guile and plotting are worst people.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Whoa.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
However, like other prophets, a part of whose story was mentioned in this surah, Shu'aib, after this general and godly invitation to piety and obedience to the command of Allah, he emphasized on the ethical and social deviations of that very environment. And he criticized them in the second part of his teachings. So at first, he is always criticizing them of these things. Since the most important deviation of those tranquil people was their economic disorders, manifest injustice, iniquity, and exploitation, Shu'aib emphasized on these subjects more. أَوْفُ الْكَيْلِ وَلَا تَكُونُوا مِنَ الْمُخْسِرِينَ Fill up the measure and be not of the cheaters. Fraud is one of the great sins and unlawful things of economy, which brings all corruptions of unlawful food. Fraud is not seen only in transaction, but there may also be some unjust persons who defraud people in teaching. There are some others who defraud people in medical profession, in engineering, and in other affairs of life. They do not give others their due right, as they must do. In these recent verses, in a few short calculated sentences, Shu'aib commands these misguided people to follow five commandments. أوفوا الكيل, fill up the measure. لا تكونوا من المخسرين, be not of the cheaters. زينوا بالقسطاس المستقيم, weigh things with the right balance. لا تبخسوا الناس أشياءهم, do not defraud people in their due goods. وَلَا تَعْثَوْا فِي الْأَرْضِ مُفْسِدِينَ And do not act corruptly in the earth making mischief. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Even though inflation remains at a 40-year high,
United States President Joe Biden has terminated a program which provided extra food money for over 40 million of the poorest Americans. The elderly, the disabled, students, poor children, and the working poor are now forced to find an average of nearly $100 more every month to spend on food. With sanctions on Russia still massively backfiring across the West, grocery prices here have soared more than 11% over the last year.
The families aren't purchasing food at the same price that they were pre-pandemic. So if not, you know, apart from having families come in more often, we may start seeing families that have to cut back on their housing budget. So what they typically spent on rent, utilities, they may have to start dipping into that to pay for groceries.
Experts on food insecurity contend that food aid to the poor has been insufficient, and that was long before the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program started seeing cuts. The expansion of so-called food stamps was both popular and successful, leading to an immediate 10% reduction in the overall poverty rate and a 14% drop in child poverty.
Versus 2021, when a lot of the pandemic relief was in force, our numbers were actually down significantly. So we've seen our numbers grow from 2021 to 2022 about 40%, give or take. We can only imagine what this next round will bring.
Without government involvement, citizens can only turn to charities for help. In states which have prematurely stopped the expanded food aid, food banks are already reporting a 40% increase in the number of visitors.
Last year, the ruling Democrats voted to end the pandemic's expansion of Medicaid, the federal program which provides a bare minimum of health care for the nation's poor. At the end of this month, at least 15 million people will also lose their health care coverage.
Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
A big rally was held in the blockaded Gaza Strip following the Friday prayers to support Palestinians in the Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank in the face of rising Israeli settlers' aggression against Palestinians. People from all walks of life came out to express their commitment to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank against Israeli attacks. Tensions have been skyrocketed in the recent days as extremist Israeli settlers under the protection of Israeli regime forces went on a rampage in the occupied West Bank villages, torching dozens of houses and cars. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the upcoming holy month of Ramadan will witness an increase in resistance against the Israeli regime.
We vow to make the holy month of Ramadan as a month of renewing our commitment to defending Al-Aqsa Mosque and Palestine. The holy month of Ramadan will be a month of mercy and unity among Palestinians, while we turn it into a month of hellfire that will burn the occupiers and the Israeli settlers.
Israeli forces and settlers' attacks since the start of 2023 have claimed the lives of some 70 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and called on all Muslims to support Palestinians and help defend Al-Quds.
We call on our brothers in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank to remain strong and steadfast. We will always support them, and we demand all Muslims and Arabs to support them in the face of settlers' attacks.
Latest figures show that the Israeli settlers' population in the occupied West Bank has grown to more than 500,000 as of January 2020. This is while some 200,000 settlers reside in Al-Quds. The Hamas movement stressed that Palestinians will remain united in the face of all Israeli aggressions.
We are here to support the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds, and we say to the Zionist regime and those who support it that the Palestinian revolution and the resistance will not stop and will spread to all Palestinian cities. This protest is sending a message of unity against the Zionist regime and the radical right-wing Zionist cabinet that continues to kill and maim Palestinians.
Observers say the international community has failed to help the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds and turned a blind eye to Israeli violations against them.
Palestinians here are calling for stepping up armed resistance against the Israeli regime in order to foil all plots against Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
With a crippling economy and a local currency losing more than 90% of its value, many of the Lebanese people dealing with economic hardships are hoping that the upcoming drilling activity in Lebanon's waters will lead to the extraction of gas. We are here on the Lebanese southern coast facing Block 9, which includes the Qana field, a prospective gas-rich field where Total Energies is expected to begin drilling this summer. And although it might be a while until the country sees any tangible revenues, many believe it could be the only life buoy for a drowning economy. According to the schedule, the program will continue for over a year, and that they're now waiting for the arrival of a rig that's needed for the drilling operation.
We are very serious about the need to drill as soon as possible and find out if indeed all the hopes and the positive assessments that we heard from and opinions that we heard from the CEOs of Eni and of Total, that indeed we have a promising field in Qana and that we will indeed have a discovery toward the end of the year. That's our hope.
As officials are working out the logistics for the foreign companies, observers remain worried over a potential intervention by the United States, which has placed many sanctions impacting Lebanon in recent years.
It's about time for the Americans to stop hindering the companies. And also it's about time for the Lebanese government in order to stand still and insist on Lebanese extraction of the oil and the gas.
This place could have been a confrontation ground. Instead, it is witnessing unprecedented tranquility. The 64-year-old Jamal Hamzi is a retired school principal who now spends most of his time in his garden. Like many in the southern border town of Naqoura, he believes that this is all due to the fact that the resistance has deterred the Israeli regime from threatening the area.
Lebanon should be able to drill its gas resources before Israel can start drilling operation in the Karish field. That was the equation that Sayed Hassan Nasrallah raised, and if it weren't for this equation, then we could not talk about drilling in Block 9 or achieve the victories we have had.
The resistance is the only hope we have to be able to restore our rights to our oil and gas resources. We were able to get the maritime deal thanks to the power of the resistance.
Total Energies has stressed that the maritime deal between Lebanon and the Israeli regime ended a deadlock over exploration activities. But some in Lebanon believe Hezbollah might need another round of UAV operations to get the drilling operation on track. Maryam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
It's walkout in Britain as tens of thousands of teachers walk off the job once again. Sapna has been a teacher for 11 years.
Now it just feels like we've got to carry on with the strikes because they're not listening to us, they're not valuing us, and they're not giving us what we want, better conditions, better pay, and all of that, really.
This is day three of a nationwide strike that has forced thousands of schools closed or partially closed, affecting millions of students.
Teachers, like the tens of thousands of others across the country, are here today to make sure their voices are heard. They're part of a wave of industrial action across the different sectors of the economy, all calling on the government for pay rises that match the soaring inflation.
Teachers' unions are also hitting out at leaked text messages between disgraced former health minister Matt Hancock and former education minister Gavin Williamson, in which the latter describes teachers as skivers. That, in addition to a leaked report last year, that hundreds of schools in England were dilapidated and at risk of collapsing. Despite that and a massive strike last month, the government has refused to budge.
We've actually given teachers the highest pay rise in 30 years. It includes a 9% pay rise for newly qualified teachers and record investment in their training and development.
To the National Education Union, who accused the government of refusing meaningful talks, that is simply not true.
We were offered 5% for teachers at some points on the scale, less than that for others. And because we've had a pay freeze for loads of successive years since 2010, and then a few pay awards that were either below or in line with inflation, that's effectively another pay cut.
The next strike is planned for March 15. If there's no movement on pay, we're likely to see more strikes, not just from the teachers like Sapna, but workers in other key professions, who at least for now, enjoy broad public support. Saeed Puriza, London.
At Seoul City Hall, the families of the victims of the Itaewon tragedy and their supporters gathered to pay their respects at a temporary memorial and to press the government to apologize and punish those ultimately responsible. Kim Hae-in's brother, Ui Hyun, was among the 159 people killed in the crowd crush last Halloween.
They didn't do anything before to prevent the disaster, and they're still not doing anything. That's why we're out here. The higher-ups who should take responsibility and prevent this from happening are just shifting the blame to others.
Two separate probes, one by the police and another by lawmakers at the National Assembly, resulted in the indictment of several lower-level police and local officials. The aftermath of the Itaewon tragedy quickly turned political. The conservative Minister of Interior and Safety, Lee Sang-min, initially suggested the disaster could not have been prevented, angering families of the victims. The democratically controlled National Assembly voted to impeach Lee last month. Officials knew tens of thousands of young people would gather in Itaewon that night, yet no crowd control measures were taken. Beginning at 6:34 p.m., hours before the crowd crush, more than 10 emergency calls warned the police of overcrowding.
Holding the people accountable and getting them to resign can offer the families some consolation and honor the victims. But the government is not now taking those steps, as if the government is not responsible for anything. It's shameful.
Of those that died, 26 were foreigners, including 5 Iranian exchange students. As families of the victims and their supporters marched to the presidential office, they again called for truth and justice and a proper memorial to their lost loved ones. Frank Smith, Seoul.
For most people in Gaza, it's just a dream to travel and explore the world outside the Israeli cruel blockade. The new generation has lived almost all its whole life under the Israeli siege, learning about the world only through screens. The longest-standing Israeli restriction on the movement of people and goods to and from Gaza has undermined the living conditions of over 2 million Palestinian residents.
The idea of this festival is that children of Gaza rarely travel abroad, and it's hard to get out of Gaza to discover the countries around the world. We sought to bring the world's countries to our children and introduce the different cultures through a collection of famous Flint statues, food and clothes, cultures in general.
Al-Amal Institute for Orphans in Gaza is an independent non-governmental organization that pursues to bring about positive change in the culture of the community and raise awareness about the orphans and their needs in order to ensure a better life for them and their families.
Yahala from around the world comes as a message to the whole world that Palestine is also part of the world. Therefore, this message reaches the world that the crossings should be open to facilitate traveling for our children and us, so we can visit these countries and communicate widely with the neighboring and other countries.
The Israeli blockade of the occupied Gaza Strip in its current form has been in place since June 27, when Israel imposed a full-scale land, sea, and air blockade on the area. The siege contravenes Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which prohibits collective punishment that prevents the realization of a broad range of human rights. 3 Gaza children died in 2022 as a result of the Israeli occupation authorities' delays or refusal to grant them permits to exit Gaza for medical treatment.
We hope such event has a positive effect on our students, and they are part of the history and the glory, and they are capable of breaking the siege and the Israeli blockade want to break their will. They have a great civilization, and this affects their psychological and social well-being.
The beleaguered Palestinians in Gaza live in a cycle of a struggle, located, imprisoned, and denied basic human rights and needs. Now, entering its 18th year, the Israeli blockade created a generation seeing a window to the world outside. These kinds of events are a glimmer of hope for the children who one day want to break the siege and restore their right to freedom of movement. Ula Al-Asi, Gaza.
Terrorism laundering, a term which Iran's foreign minister's two-day visit to Geneva will be remembered by. Addressing the 52nd session of the Human Rights Council at the UN headquarters, Hossein Amir Abdullahian did not mince his words when it came to elaborating on the fact that Iran had been a victim of an unprecedented propaganda war. He said the rights of the Iranian nation were completely ignored during that war, launched by the same countries claiming to be advocates of human rights.
The role of anti-Iran terrorist groups in the recent crisis in my country was evident. Some states were involved in terrorism laundering while applying double standard. They provided considerable financial and logistical facility to some violent and terrorist elements during the unrest. The UN human rights mechanisms could and should contribute to the promotion and protection of human rights through genuine dialogue, constructive interaction, and respectful capacity-building cooperation.
Some European officials in particular, who then took the opportunity to meet with Amir Abdullahian. Several other meetings followed as well, involving officials from countries including Armenia, Indonesia, Senegal, and Venezuela, seeking stronger bilateral ties. Top UN officials also met with Iran's foreign minister, including Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Boosting cooperation was the key issue in the agenda of this pentilateral meeting. Iran is hosting over 5 million Afghan refugees, but international humanitarian organizations have not been offering any kind of help. On the other hand, unilateral sanctions have also exacerbated the situation of these Afghan refugees. The next session of this pentilateral meeting will be held in Tehran to discuss the situation further.
The UN Secretary General was informed of the efforts that Iran has made to solve the problems in Yemen, and Mr. Guterres demanded that we continue our efforts. Regarding Ukraine, Iran's stance was clarified. Iran is ready to use its potential for initiating a peace process. Iran's cooperation with the IAEA and the upcoming visit of the agency's delegation was also discussed in the meeting.
An issue that was reiterated by the foreign minister during the 2023 Conference on Disarmament, which started on the same day the 22nd session of the Human Rights Council was held, allowing the issue of human rights to be discussed in more detail.
We have several agenda items. We have more than 40 or 50 themes and around the same number of country situations that will be discussed over the course of this session. It is also a sign of the importance, I would say, that states and NGOs attach to the Human Rights Council as a venue to discuss issues which are often not heard in other venues. So it's incredibly significant.
This year marks 75 years since the adoption of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and 30 years since the adoption of the Vienna Declaration, two milestone documents that continue to guide the work of the Council. But it is very clear that we still have a long way to go.
The 52nd session of the Human Rights Council started on February 27th and will continue until April the 4th. Key issues on the agenda include the three Ps: promotion, protection, and prevention. Promotion of human rights, protection of those who fight for human rights, and preventing human rights from being violated. Gisum Shahmadi, the Human Rights Headquarters in Geneva.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.